celebrating 25 years on the air. This is Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat on 96.1 WSBT. The sports leader.
Notre Dame has defeated Louisville 104-101 in five overtimes.
Run! Brian Stavisky! It's the ball game and the Irish will play for another day!
But to the Notre Dame family, I can't say anything except I've been blessed.
The Penn Kingsmen, 5A, state champs.
I think anytime you have a team with Skylar Diggins at the point, you better not count us out.
The Indianapolis Colts select Quentin Nelson.
Charlie Weiss's tenure as Notre Dame's football coach has come to an end.
South Bend, Washington has etched its name into Hoosier hysteria history.
Out of the 160 minor league teams, South Bend will be the best.
Three and he hits. Demetrius Jackson.
Score, Marshawn! 4-2 Bruins.
Brian Kelly, the new head coach at Notre Dame.
They score! Notre Dame, 3.7 seconds away from a spot in the national championship game.
The Clay Colonials win the state championship. They are living a dream.
Enrique Ogunbowale wins the national championship for Notre Dame.
Your hosts are Eric Hansen and Darren Pritchett.
And Sports Beat is on the air for this Friday, February the 22nd of 2019, presented by Budweiser. Great times are waiting. Grab some Buds. Eric Hansen is the Fighting Irish football insider for the South Bend Tribune back in our WSBT studios. I'm Darren Pritchett with the Fighting Irish hockey team in Minneapolis, Minnesota. The Fighting Irish getting set to take on the Gophers in the first of two. Tonight, late start, 9 o'clock Eastern time on our sister station, Z94.3 FM. I'm still at the team hotel, actually, so I'll be heading over to the arena about 6:30, so I'll be with you for about 90 minutes or so. Sean will wrap up the remainder of the program, and we thank you for joining us on our program brought to you by Budweiser. How are things in South Bend today?
They are beautiful. It's we got a 4 at the beginning of our temperature, and it's not a single digit.
That's a beautiful thing. I wish I was there to enjoy that with you. It's a little cooler up here in Minnesota, but all in all, it is not too shabby. Well, we're looking forward to getting to a lot of different subjects tonight on the program. Quick hitters coming up in a second. We'll talk about the Irish offensive line. NL Central talk. My 5 question of the day centers around the Irish women's basketball team. Who are the 5 best players of the Muffet McGraw era? Now, that's going to be a really interesting list that Eric will put together. And along the same lines, on my Twitter account, which is 961 SportsBeat, I've just thrown out a little Twitter question for fun. If you were to build a women's college basketball team and all the players are in their prime, which of these 3 would you choose first? Diggins, Ogunbowale, or Riley? So the voting is underway. We're getting some votes in already, so we'll update you on that Twitter poll question in just a little bit here on WSBT Radio. Next hour, a couple of thoughts on the Irish basketball team as they get set to host Virginia Tech tomorrow. We've got Rapid Fire. I'll preview Notre Dame hockey against Minnesota, and then Sean will wrap up the program from there. And if you want to feel really old today, it is the 39th anniversary of the Miracle on Ice when the United States hockey team stunned Russia in Lake Placid back in 1980, 4-3 the final. That got the U.S. to the gold medal game, but that was something else. That was the basically Russian professional hockey team that lost to a bunch of college kids, and it's great to be at Minnesota today on the anniversary because they have a great display of all the Olympians who played at Minnesota, and Herb Brooks, the head coach of that 1980 team, won 3 national championships at Minnesota in the 1970s. I think there were 6 or 7 players on the Miracle on Ice team that actually were from the Minnesota program. And they have a nice display, including one of the players' gold medals is at the hockey arena we'll be playing at tonight. So there's a lot of Minnesota history behind that Miracle on Ice 39 years ago today. And it wasn't even on live TV, which is kind of comical to think about today. There was no Twitter, so really nobody knew what happened until you watched it on tape delay on ABC. And, Eric, that's how I became a hockey fan. I'd never watched a hockey game. I guess I would have been about 8 years old at that time. I turned it on. I'm like, why are all these people chanting USA? Why is this part of the ice bluer than the rest? If you've seen the highlights, like they, I guess they had to paint areas of the ice. And I can't remember the reason why, but that's why it's blue, like behind the goal lines. So 39 years ago today, I became a hockey fan, and here I am getting set to call Notre Dame hockey tonight. So I'm very, very happy about that. And they even, I think, threw some gloves and sticks that day, Eric, even though they didn't win the gold medal. I think that was worthy of throwing the gloves and sticks.
And will they be chanting anything at tonight's game? Will they chant Minnesota?
Well, hopefully they'll be a little nicer, more creative than the IU fan base was during the Purdue game a few days ago, if you know what I'm saying.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. How about we quickly move along to some quick hitters to get the program started? Arike Ogunbowale became Notre Dame women's basketball's all-time leading scorer. She put up 25 points last night in Notre Dame's 89-61 win over Duke at Purcell Pavilion. The Irish are now 25-3, 12-2 in the ACC. They'll have a road game against a ranked Syracuse team on Monday. Didn't see the game up here in Minnesota, but it sounds like she got to that total pretty quickly, and she created a turnover, went down the floor, and hit a nice jump shot.
She did. You know, it was over very quickly in terms of her getting the record, and she just kept piling on the points. I thought at one point, I had to look up her career high, but, you know, they started to kind of distribute the basketball a little bit more around, and she didn't play very much in the fourth quarter, ended up with 25 points. Mm-hmm. But some really good performances besides her. Probably the best game Brianna Turner's played all season with 21 points and 15 rebounds.
That's a good sign for the Irish as they take down a Duke program that has absolutely fallen off the map. They were normally a team that was a number one or a number two seed in the NCAA tournament for many years, but now they're kind of at the bottom of the barrel in the Atlantic Coast Conference, and the Irish, a lot of offense as usual, beating Duke 89-61. Mike Bray's Irish are back at home to take on 20th-ranked Virginia Tech tomorrow, 4 o'clock tip on WSBT Radio. The Irish opened the ACC season back on January 1st and lost to the Hokies in Blacksburg 81-66. That day, TJ Gibbs had a nice performance, 19 points. DJ Harvey, 16. Nate Leshefsky, 14. We go back to New Year's Day, and here was Irish head coach Mike Bray's reaction to his team's loss to Virginia Tech.
We've had a lot of young guys, first ACC game on the road against a really good team. And, you know, every time they tried to get away from us, for the most part, we made a run. We just couldn't make one last run. I'm certainly very impressed with Virginia Tech. They're really skilled. They're really old. And they can stretch it and shoot it.
Well, Virginia Tech's been a little up and down since then. They're still, you know, playing good basketball overall. They're 9-5 in the ACC. The Irish are 3-10, but they have been missing their point guard, Justin Robinson, for a few games. He's been out with a toe injury, and the offense just has not been as fluid for Virginia Tech. They've lost to Clemson. They have lost to teams you expect them to lose to. So this team may be a little uneasy at this time. We'll see how Notre Dame responds, Eric. That's the big question after a very disappointing loss to the last place team of the ACC at home Tuesday night, with that being Wake Forest. How are they going to react? I mean, I don't know there's really any way of knowing. I hope they don't react the way Indiana has to their losing streaks. I mean, that's been miserable to watch at times. The effort level against Minnesota was so poor for Indiana. Their enthusiasm level was poor. I don't expect that from this Mike Bray basketball team, but I do wonder how they're going to react after you look at the schedule and where you are, and even though you're in the bottom quarter of the ACC, you feel like you're going to beat Wake Forest at home, especially after they were coming off a 37-point home loss to North Carolina. You wonder where they were going to be coming into that Notre Dame game.
Absolutely. I'm really curious to see what kind of effort and what kind of execution we see out of this Notre Dame men's basketball team. And as we talked earlier in the week about, you know, what's left out there for them, I really think this is about the 2019-2020 season at this point, and getting your ducks moving in the right direction for that season.
Yeah, it's really not about the NIT at this point. Let's get through this season and look ahead to next year. Meanwhile, just probably a five-minute walk from where I'm at. The Barn here on the campus of the University of Minnesota. Michigan beat the Gophers last night, 69-60, so that sets up the big showdown. Sunday at 2:45 in Ann Arbor, it's Michigan against Michigan State. The two teams are tied for first in the Big Ten. It'll be the first of two meetings over the next 2 weeks. And Purdue is right there, of course, only a half a game behind Michigan and Michigan State for first place in the Big Ten. Speaking of Indiana, they've lost 11 of 12. They'll play tonight at 9 o'clock against number 21, Iowa. Iowa's had some buzzer beaters recently that have went their way, although they lost very late in the game at home to Maryland earlier this week. But Iowa right now 20-6, a very solid basketball team that former Irish assistant Fran McCaffrey has put together. Notre Dame hockey begins a two-game road series against Minnesota tonight at 9 o'clock Eastern time on our sister station, Z94.3 FM. Minnesota surprised everyone last weekend by winning both games on the road against Big Ten runaway leader Ohio State. Irish head coach Jeff Jackson on the Gophers' recent success.
Well, I mean, the first half, I thought, you know, we had a pretty good first half. I mean, it's really been more about after Christmas break, that month of January.
That's the wrong soundbite there, so we'll just move along. But the Irish hockey team will take on Minnesota tonight at 9 o'clock on Z94.3 FM. Gophers coming off those two big wins over Ohio State. The Buckeyes can clinch the Big Ten regular season title with a win on the road against their rival, Michigan, tonight. Eric, we're going to talk a little Irish football to wrap up this opening segment here on WSBT Radio. First, I just want to mention, you know, I'm not one that gets overly excited about recruiting, but just on Twitter, it just seems like Carter Carls, your colleague from the South Bend Tribune, has been talking a lot about a lot of offers going out right now for this Fighting Irish football program. I guess it's that time of the year where they're getting out offers, maybe even to some of the 21 kids at this time, or is this mainly 2020?
It's both, Darren, and, you know, there's going to be official visits in the springtime, so that's why you're seeing so many with the 2020 kids, because, you know, they have five commitments. It's going to be a smaller class, and they want to get ahead of the curve like mm-hmm. they were last year with these players, and so they want to get them on campus unofficially. They have a big junior day this weekend, and they also have a grad transfer coming in, Eric Kuma. They have some 2021 kids, including quarterback from San Diego, Buchner from Shane Walton's high school. Shane Walton is the defensive coordinator and assistant athletic director at the Bishop School in La Jolla. So, and he's their top target as a quarterback. So, yeah, it seems like it's so early. And I think, again, the difficulty, you know, when people see these lists, is, you know, the kind of the default ranking, as we found out with the fake recruit, is three stars. So some of these kids are three stars or haven't been rated at all yet. And so people don't realize maybe the quality that's coming in this weekend for Notre Dame, but a lot of big names. Latham Ransom is probably the most prominent player coming in. Safety from Tucson, Arizona, who's at the top of the Notre Dame recruiting board. So yeah, that's why you're seeing this, seeing Carter Carls byline so much and notes on these guys.
Yeah, 3 minutes ago, he's talking about a defensive tackle from North Carolina, Peyton Page, 2021 player who received a Notre Dame offer. So if you follow Carter Carls, you probably have seen a lot of this recently. And his Twitter account is at Carter, and then Carls is spelled K-A-R-E-L-S. Look him up, follow him. And just like me, you can see all the different offers that are going out right now for this Fighting Irish football team that will be getting started with spring practice any day now, we would assume. And Eric, right now we go into this spring camp with a lot of experience back along the offensive line. I say that knowing the left guard position. The hope was it was going to be Alex Bars throughout last season, but he suffered that knee injury against Stanford and was lost for the season. And then there was some moving around of parts before settling on a left guard for the second half of last year. You got to replace Mustafa, of course, at center. So let's start with Liam Eichenberg first. We'll go to the left side of the offensive line, the guy that protects the blind side of Ian Book. this time last year, Eric, he was probably the number one concern, and maybe concern is the wrong word. If you're going to be picky and say, hey, there's a guy we got to learn more about to see how good he is, it was Liam Eichenberg, a first-time starter at left tackle. How would you evaluate his first season?
Well, you know, his introduction was against Michigan, and he had Chase Winovich and Rashawn Gary to deal with in that first game, so that's pretty difficult start to your starting career. And I thought he, you know, treaded water in that game, won some battles, lost some. And then I think he got a lot better as the season went on, even with having a high ankle sprain kind of middle of the season toward the end. He was a guy that you started to notice less because he was doing things right. You know, I think that's kind of the evolution with offensive linemen with Notre Dame fans is, they notice when you make mistakes, then you kind of go invisible when you're doing your job, and then you become apparent again when you turn into Quentin Nelson, where you have highlights as an offensive lineman. So he isn't quite to that point yet, but he's at the point where he is doing his job, and he is doing it well.
Let's move to the center position. Sam Mustipher surprisingly did not get an invite to the combine. Maybe some of that has to do with so many young guys coming out, but there's no doubt he's going to make an NFL roster. He is a high-caliber center. And I would say going into the spring, if you were to sit down with a bunch of Irish fans and have maybe a question-and-answer situation, I think there'd be a lot of questions about who are the top candidates at the center position. It may be the least well-known position going into 2019. So how would you answer that question?
Well, I would say the top candidate would be Trevor Ruland, who played each of the guard positions at one point last year, but he's a center by trade. And he's 6'4", 295. And if he can be healthy, he's going to give you a nice push from the center position. I mean, if you'd want to know, you want to be in a meeting with a guy that's going to have his hand up and have all the right answers, it's Colin. And he's also a guy that knows all the positions on the offensive line, can help the quarterback with protections. The cerebral side, he's absolutely got down. He's a guy that's had some injuries in his career. He had a torn pectoral muscle last spring that affected his overall upper body strength in the fall, but he still was able to get on the field and help the team. So I'd say he's the number one candidate. I think Colin Grunhard, who was a former walk-on or is a walk-on, Tim Grunhard's son, he is 6'1", 26, or 280. He's smaller, and he would be, at least at this point, the backup. But there's two really intriguing prospects. Luke Jones at 6'5", 303. We're talking kind of Nick Martin size. He is going to be a sophomore. He redshirted as a freshman last year from Arkansas. And the guy I'm really interested to see, 6'3", 275, true freshman, early enrollee, Zeke Correll. I think Zeke Correll has a chance to be an elite center. I think he's on that kind of trajectory. But again, he's going to have to beat out Luke Jones at some point. And I don't think either of them beat out Trevor Ruland. But there's a lot of talent at that position, a lot of depth.
Wasn't Jones a tackle in high school?
Jones was a tackle in high school. And that's what happens when they come to Notre Dame. It was like Harry Hiestand, you know, did the same thing. He wants to get his best five guys on the field. And so you tend to recruit tackles because they're bigger, they're athletic, and you can move them inside. Then you have this athletic player inside. And sometimes those guys have never snapped before they show up at Notre Dame. So it's interesting. And there's a lot of coaching and technique that's involved. But if you got somebody, again, like Trevor Ruland that knows the offense like a coach, that's a tremendous asset.
Eric Hansen, Darren Pritchett with you, Sports Beat on WSBT Radio, talking Fighting Irish football with spring practice right around the corner. It's going to start any day now. Let me ask about the right guard position. Tommy Kramer is the favorite. Any concern at that position going into the spring camp?
You know, I've talked to a lot of people about Tommy Kramer and playing that right guard and how talented is he. I mean, he raw material, 6'6". 316, you know, he's a guy that you think has to be on the verge of a breakthrough season. And I think there were a lot of ups and downs for Tommy at a new position last year. I think tackle, he ended up maybe not having the proper footwork to be a tackle, maybe not athletic enough. But inside, I think eventually he's going to get it, and there's going to be a lot of progress with Tommy. Just with the other offensive linemen that I've talked to, there's a lot of confidence in him. If not, there are other people certainly waiting in the wings, and I would say Josh Lugg, who could play tackle or guard, would be a guy that's going to push somebody at some point. He's a very talented player at 6'7", 314. But I would be surprised if we're having this conversation about Tommy's ups and downs once we get to August. I think that we're going to see a much more consistent player at that position.
Okay, hopefully that is the case. Final question in this segment. Give me a name or two of young offensive linemen that fans should watch out for.
That have a chance to play or that are on the rise and will be really good in years to come.
You can define however you would like.
Well, the interesting thing is a lot of these freshman offensive linemen are already on campus, so I'm going to highlight Andrew Krzysztofik. I think at some point he will be the starting left tackle at the University of Notre Dame. He'll probably start out on the right side at first and then move over to the left. And I would say Jarrett Patterson, who also is behind Eichenberg at left tackle right now. I mean, he was a guy that was, you know, kind of a in that gray area, three-star, four-star. And he came in and impressed the heck out of people. We talked to Alex Bars recently a little bit about him, and Alex was super impressed with Jarrett Patterson and what his future looks like. But there's a bunch of them. I mean, this was a really good recruiting class. I know the person that a lot of fans want to know about is Darnell Ewell, and I don't see him zipping up the depth chart. In fact, he may flip back over to defense just because of depth issues over on that side. But those guys, Quinn Carroll is another guy you can throw out there. Zeke Correll, who I mentioned earlier. There's a lot of really good young offensive linemen. Jeff Quinn did a tremendous job. And taking over for Harry, he's staying on the recruiting front.
Eric, just to move away from offensive line for a moment, just to wrap up this segment, I mentioned Carter Carls has been on top of all these recruiting offers going out. He also had a story about Jack Kaiser, who is an incoming freshman for this Fighting Irish football team, Mr. Football in Indiana this year. And he had a source that told him that Kaiser is expected to miss all of spring football. He underwent shoulder surgery on a partially torn left labrum earlier this month. Can you add anything to what Carter had in that story?
Sure. You know, it's one of those situations that happens with players from time to time where they have soreness in a joint, like a shoulder. And that was the case with Jack. He shows up in January with a sore shoulder. They did a routine physical at that point, and they said, you know what, let's take a look at this with an MRI. So he comes in mid-January, early February. They take an MRI, and there's a torn labrum. And this is his left shoulder. And so they said, you know what, you can continue to lift until you have the surgery because there's no risk. But if you're going to get banged around in spring practice, there's a chance of further injury. It's a partially torn labrum. Why don't we clean it up, and then you have a fresh start in the summer and in the fall. And so that's what they decided to do. So he had surgery a couple weeks ago. He's expected back for fall camp, if not sooner, at 100%. And so, again, this wasn't where, you know, he comes in here and he couldn't handle the weight room. This is an injury he showed up with. So, but I think even though you lose that first spring practice, I think it's a positive, you know, doing your rehab at Notre Dame where you have the Notre Dame doctors and Matt Bayless can supervise that. I think he's in a good spot. And you still get, you know, acclimated to classes.
But when you look ahead to the upcoming season, I mean, this is a guy that's going to make a big adjustment from A football in Indiana to playing Division I at Notre Dame. The expectation was probably not a role on this team, a guy that was going to get the reps and probably learn about the weight room. Was that going to be what 2019 was going to be about for him?
Well, I think he's certainly a guy that you could say, I think he could help us on special teams. Brian Kelly saying that, that's my Brian Kelly voice. He, you know, you can play him up to four games. If you had an injury, I think he's a little light at the Rover, and it looks more and more like Asmar Bilal is going to get a long, long, long look at the Buck linebacker, so that you're looking at Simon Owusu-Koramoah, Kaiser, and Lufau. Two of those guys, true freshmen, one of them on campus already. I think this spring could have helped him a lot, but again, he'll be around. You know, he won't be down in Royal Center, Indiana. He'll be on campus, so he'll be able to watch practices at least. But the thing is, he's 6'1", 205. Is he going to be able to make a whole lot of progress toward being 6'1", 220? I don't think that's realistic. But I still think there's a benefit. He's just an intriguing guy. I'm not sure what to think of him. And when you talk to other people on the beat, there are people that think this could be, you know, kind of a Drew Tranquil kind of surprise recruit. There are other people that think he'll never play. And so I would have loved to, I mean, probably of in this recruiting class, that's probably the widest variance of reactions is this particular kid.
Probably it's just the perception from playing small-time football in high school.
Small ball. That's all it is, Darren, because there's people that just don't feel like I would admit there's usually an extra step of evolution for kids that play small ball, but that doesn't mean they can't overcome that. I think Jerron Jones is a good example of that, where, you know, playing against kids that were half his size. I mean, he looked like a giant in the photos that we had of him from high school, you know, and then against kids his own size, but eventually he got it. That doesn't mean you can't be a good player, but I do think the learning curve is steeper in that first year.
All right, that's some Fighting Irish football conversation. Again, we're expecting spring practice to probably start next week, and we'll be
on
talking
Saturday. On Saturday for sure.
It is for sure. Did that come out today and I missed it?
It hasn't come out, but the person in charge told me it is definitely Saturday.
Okay, I'll say
we haven't
Saturday
gotten a schedule
then.
Yet, but it is definitely Saturday.
Well, you had me looking through my email. I was thinking maybe I missed it, but okay. So practice is tomorrow then. So,
A week from Saturday, March 2nd.
A week from Saturday,
yeah,
okay.
March 2nd.
See, that's why I needed an email, so I can just read it and not just assume it was this
I know.
So,
week from
Eric,
Saturday.
Send me an email, darn it. Come on. That's your job.
Okay.
All right. We'll step aside for a second. When we come back, we'll shift to some baseball conversation, then a fun My 5 question of the day with Arike Agumbawale setting the all-time Irish women's basketball scoring record last night. We ask, who are the five best players of the Muffet McGraw era? Eric has the tough task of ranking the top five. That's coming up in just a little bit from 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader. Sports Beat continues, presented by Budweiser. Great times are waiting. Grab some buds. I'm Darren Pritchett with the Irish hockey team in Minneapolis, Minnesota, getting set for the Irish and the Gophers. 9 o'clock opening faceoff tonight on Z94.3 FM. And then tomorrow, another odd start time, 5:30. So we'll have both games for you on Z94.3 FM. I mentioned on my Twitter account at 961 SportsBeat, I put up a little poll question a little bit ago. If you could build a women's college basketball team and all the players are in their prime, which of these three players would you choose first? And the three choices, all from Notre Dame: Skylar Diggins, Arike Agumbawale, or Ruth Riley. Now, we're very early on in the voting, but it's very close right now. We have Ruth Riley getting 36%, Skylar Diggins getting 36%, and Agumbawale getting 28%. I'm not going to ask Eric his choice because he's going to be answering the My 5 question of the day, which is ranking the five best players of the Muffet McGraw era. Is it safe to say those were the three that were atop your list without giving too much away?
There was a fourth player that was in the top four there, so they were 1, 2, and 4.
Really? Okay. Yes. Yeah. I can't wait to hear your list.
Yeah.
So that's coming up in about 12 minutes or so here on WSBT Radio. We're going to shift gears to baseball. The NL Central is a big, big talking point for national writers and, of course, the writers from the markets, the teams involved in this division, just because it is expected to be an unbelievably competitive division in 2019. The Brewers, the defending NL Central champs, they came from 5 down in September to pass the Cubs. The Cubs end up losing the wild card game. St. Louis won 88 games, not enough to make the playoffs. The Reds have reshuffled their deck. The Pirates are kind of the Pirates at this particular time, but some believe all 5 teams could end up over 500. I don't know if I'm buying that. It's going to be tough because they're just going to beat up on each other when you play 18, 19 times during the season. But we'll start with the Cubbies. Very strange season for Chicago last year. Their offense, they were shut out or scored just one run 40 times last year. So Cubs manager Joe Maddon recently was asked, what's going to be different in 2019?
Not going to really notice it all that much from the outside. Already talking to the coaching staff. One of my graduate degrees in hitting, actually. My undergrad, I think, was in catching and maybe base running. So I really like the hitting component of it. I want to get more involved with the hitting overall, and that's not to denigrate our new guys. These guys are outstanding. It's just something there's a particular part of it I'd like to get more involved with. I've talked to some of the players. I've already done this stuff in the past, like I said, but it might be somewhat more obvious this year if you just see me out there working a little bit differently. But as an example, it'd be like hitting or situational hitting component. And then there's other things. Listen, I like the coach. I mean, there's a difference between managing and coaching. There's a total difference between the two things. And I really enjoy managing. But when you coach, when you actually coach players, when you're watching the game, which I do, we watch the game, there's a different kind of an emotion internally about somebody you worked with that day or for the last 2 weeks or whatever. So I've always enjoyed the coaching component from this visceral reaction that you get internally. And again, not to get a pat on the back, but regardless, you are just a little bit more involved in that moment when you've actually coached somebody. Like, you look at coaches. I mean, managers get involved in the wins and losses, man. We wear it as much as anybody. You maybe exult more in the beginning, and you definitely wear it more at the end. But as a coach, it's a different feeling to the day when you actually get out there and work with people and then watch it take effect in the game. And then when it doesn't take effect, you got to go back to the drawing board.
I don't know if I've ever heard a baseball guy say so much but say so little. I mean, he goes on these long speeches, and sometimes you have to listen very close to really get an answer to the question that was asked. Well, Chris Bryant hitting the ball out of the ballpark is going to help that 40 number go way down in 2019 if the shoulder is healthy, and he continues to say he is fine, he's ready to go, and he gets back to hitting 30 home runs. You know, that's going to help the Cubs offense more than anything else. They became kind of a station-to-station team, even though Maddon doesn't like that particular phrase. No manager likes that phrase. But it is a team that lacks a lot of team speed to manufacture runs. You got all the big boppers in the middle of the lineup. There were a ton of strikeouts last year, and that's a huge part of the conversation. But, you know, Eric, as it's been well documented, for whatever reason in today's game, strikeouts are now more accepted. If you strike out 5 times, but if you get on base 5 times in those 10 at-bats, that's considered a huge success. So with all the strikeouts in the game, it's going to lead to nights in which when you don't hit a home run and you don't have a lot of team speed to manufacture runs, maybe small ball like in the National League, you're going to have years like the Cubs had last year where 40 times they were shut out or scored one run. It's almost unthinkable with the talent in that lineup. But to me, at some point, some organization, and the Astros actually 2 years ago were the least team to be struck out, and they went on to win the World Series. At some point, you got to cut down on the strikeouts. I just don't understand swinging from I mean, swinging like you've got nothing left in the tank with two strikes, it just doesn't make a whole lot of sense. To me, it's got to get down to putting the ball in play rather than just launch angle, launch angle, launch angle.
Agreed, Darren. And, you know, there's something to be said for a sacrifice fly when you just need a fly ball. Not all outs are created equal. So I agree with you. I think you got to cut down on the strikeouts.
And will it be different in 2019? It's really hard to say at this point because it's basically the same personnel, except Daniel Descalso probably is going to play a lot in April in the middle infield with Addison Russell still suspended. Javier Baez probably will play short. Descalso will play second. Ben Zobrist just reported to camp today, apparently. So otherwise, it's kind of the same group. So yeah, I have to wonder, it's going to come down to process because the same personnel are basically back in 2019. Now, Milwaukee is coming off winning this Central. They lost in Game 7 of the National League Championship Series to the Dodgers. Reigning NL MVP Christian Yelich on his team's preseason expectations.
Your expectations as a player are always high, no matter how high the expectations are from the outside, from the media, from fans, from wherever. I think you hold yourself to a high standard and understand what you're capable of. Will it be like that every year? I don't know. I think that was one of those years that was a lot of fun. But I think a lot of people's favorite words in baseball now are regression and coming back to the mean or whatever you want to say. So we'll see. I hope that's not the case, and I don't plan on it being the case, but I think you just prepare the same way you always prepare, go about the game the same way, and you see where you stand at the end of the year. You always want to play at a high level. You want to contribute and help the team win in any way possible, and it was definitely a lot of fun, not only for myself down the stretch, but the team. And like I said earlier, it's you chase those feelings again, how awesome that was to be a part of, and those celebrations and winning the division and playing in the playoffs. You remember that and you want to get back to it, and that's fresh in your mind going into spring training. So yeah, you want to play at as high a level as you're capable of, and that's the goal here going into spring training.
Eric, chances of Milwaukee going back-to-back in the Central?
If they get a lot of surprises with their pitching, I like a lot of their position players, Darren. I don't like their pitching depth. I do in the starting pitching, I should say. I don't like their starting pitching depth. I think they have to have some surprises in there, like a Miles Mikolas last year. They need to have somebody that just really jumps above their normal career arc.
The bullpen was so good last year. I mean, once they got to the seventh inning, they had the lead. It was over.
Yep.
The rotation's going to look very similar, although they get Jimmy Nelson back, a guy that missed all of last year, so that's going to help them a lot. But the offense was spectacular with Yelich having a career year. Aguiar came out of nowhere. Kane was really good as a 30-plus-year-old outfielder. So I'm with you. If the rotation holds up, and you know what? They may only go 4 or 5 innings. They made it work last year. They're going to be very difficult to contend with. But I just wonder if everybody in the pen who had such amazing years, can they do it once again? Or is it going to be a little regression? It's going to be very interesting to see. And the other team considered in the hunt for the title is St. Louis. They made two big offseason acquisitions, left-handed reliever Andrew Miller and first baseman Paul Goldschmidt. Goldie has just 1 year left on his deal. So is the 31-year-old Goldschmidt in the future cards for St. Louis? Cardinals president of baseball operations, John Mozeliak.
We don't know what the outcome's going to be, and I think, you know, how you want to describe it is in the eyes of the beholder. But ultimately, I think for us, we really wanted to focus on 2019. We had a lot of different ways we could have gone about this, but we felt Goldie would be the right fit for us. And, you know, just watching him work with our infield, and I think the impact he's going to have, not only on our team, but the people he's surrounded by, it's really exciting. And great guy, getting to know him more and more, and I really feel like between him and Andrew Miller, our baseball IQ for our club went up quite high.
Audio courtesy of the MLB Network. Eric, 88 wins last year for St. Louis. Will they be better?
I think they will. I think Goldschmidt certainly makes them better in a lot of ways, offensively and defensively at first base. If you can remember what a butcher job first base was at times last year. I like St. Louis's pitching depth. I think I agree with you. We've talked off the air that maybe one more established reliever in the bullpen, but I like Hicks, the young kid, and I like Andrew Miller being a part of that. Again, they have pitching depth that, you know, Carlos Martinez has this hiccup in spring training and there's not a big panic. Certainly they love to have him back, but they do have some really good arms on this team. The Fowler is the real mystery guy. I'm really curious to see what happens with him.
You take a look at four of their guys, they could be number one, number two type starters if healthy and effective. Jack Flaherty, Miles Michaelis, Carlos Martinez, and Alex Reyes, who's coming off two injuries in back-to-back years where he's only pitched four innings, but a top prospect, amazing talent. They pushed him forward in the spring. It looks like they might be getting him ready to start. At the beginning of the year, that wasn't the plan. I think Carlos Martinez's shoulder has affected some things. I do believe they might be an arm short in the bullpen. Fowler is a big X factor on this team. But baseball prospectus, they come out with those Pecota projections all the time. Six consecutive years, they've underestimated St. Louis. The Cardinals have won more games than Pecota expected. And I'm going off the top of my head, I think they picked him for 87 this year. So I think with all the pitching they have, they can stay competitive. And if you can get Fowler at least to the guy that normally had a 360 on base percentage, then you can put Carpenter, Fowler, Goldschmidt, Ozuna, DeYoung, and Molina, and that is one heck of a top six in the order. And I think they can go toe-to-toe with Chicago from an offensive standpoint and Milwaukee as well. It's going to be a fascinating race. We didn't even bring up the Reds, who have just rebuilt their baseball team. We'll get to that probably in the coming days. We'll take a quick timeout. A very fun My 5 is coming up next on WSBT.
One question, five answers. This is the My 5 question of the day on Michiana's sports leader, 96.1 FM, WSBT.
Well, today's question centers around what happened last night. Arike Ogunbowale became the Notre Dame women's basketball team's all-time leading scorer. So we asked this question to Eric Hansen. Who are the five best Irish women's basketball players during the Muffet McGraw era? He has come up with five answers. He will rank them 5-1, with number one being the best player of the Muffet McGraw era. We begin with number five.
Man, this was a hard list, Darren, because you're leaving off players that were multiple All-Americans from the top five. But I'm going to go at number five with Jewel Lloyd. And Jewel had a chance to be higher on this list, but she did not come back for her senior season. So it was an incredible three-season career. Decided to go to the NBA early, and she played a fourth year. She was the number six scorer right now all time, multiple All-American, ESPN Player of the Year, but didn't have that senior season, so she finds herself at five.
That's a good list when she's number five. Let's move to number four.
Well, this is a good list when this person's number four, and I'll explain why she's not higher. It's Arike Ogunbowale. I have her at four. Darren, I feel like as a freshman and a sophomore, she was not a complete player. She didn't play very good defense. She didn't distribute the ball well, didn't have very good court vision. She could certainly score. Now, she gains tons of points for what she did last year in the championship game in the semifinals. She has a really good cast around her as well. If she wins another championship, certainly she moves up this list. But the people in front of her I have for a reason.
Well, statistically, Skylar Diggins with double the assists and steals on Ogunbowale, so I can't argue with that. Let's move along to number three as Eric ranks the five best Irish women's basketball players of the Muffet McGraw era.
Well, this is going to be the most controversial one, Darren, and number three is Beth Morgan, Beth Cunningham now. She was only an honorable mention All-American, but this was during an era where Notre Dame was trying to break through, where there wasn't respect for the program. And I'll give you an example. In her junior year, they were number 21 in the AP poll, and the committee made them a 12 seed in the tournament.
Right.
The next year, they were number 15 in the AP poll. That the committee made them a 6, and they made it to the first Final Four. So she was a pioneer. I think if you put Beth Morgan on this team, she's an All-American multi-years. I just think, again, she kind of broke through, and she didn't maybe have the national recognition, but she set the table for these other great players.
Okay. Can't wait to hear who number 2 is on your list.
Well, I'll tell you, it's funny, Darren, because the answer to your survey question would be different than 1 and 2. And I would pick the number 2 player as the player I would start my team with, and that's Ruth Riley. She was a National Player of the Year, multi-All-American, all kinds of scoring and rebounding records, won the first national championship in school history. But I think it's harder to find 6'5" players of her caliber than it is to find an All-American guard as talented as some of these other players are. So that's why the answer would be different in your survey with Ruth Riley at 2.
All right, so number 1
is Skylar Diggins. Skylar Diggins helped elevate a really good program to a great program, and a great program consistently. And I think a lot of the reason that people like Arike and Marina Mabry and Brianna Turner wanted to play at Notre Dame is because they saw Skylar Diggins and the way she carried herself and the way she got this team in the Final Four on a regular basis.
That's the My 5. That was fun to go down memory lane. We've got 30 seconds for what's coming up in the South Bend Tribune.
Well, it's the Carter Carl Show tomorrow. He has a story on the big junior weekend. He also has the story in print on Jack Kaiser's injury. Tom Noy has a column on ND basketball. We have Hartford Cast Boys Basketball. Boys Basketball feature on St. Joe's J.R. Kinesny, if I didn't butcher that, and much, much more.
Enjoy your weekend. I'll see you on Monday.
Thank you.
Sports Beat continues after this. WSBT South Bend.
Celebrating 25 years on the air. This is Budweiser's weekday sports beat on 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader.
Notre Dame is moving on to the Elite Eight. Taylor, he stopped. Notre Dame wins.
Luke Leitner and Small Bone have been the catalysts for South Bend St. Joseph's.
Jalen Smith verbally committed to play football at Notre Dame.
And Notre Dame is going to Omaha for the first time since 1957.
Rebound, run the wall, middle. Score! The Irish are going to the championship game!
Congratulations, Tom, on the championship.
Thank you. We brought one back to South Bend finally.
Ryan Newman, Roger Penske win the Daytona 500.
Leitner going to try to sneak it ahead. Touchdown, SC!
Can't express how sorry I am towards Matt Tye.
And the White Sox have won the World Series.
I don't pay a damn bit of attention to what people on the outside say, because I understand none of them, though.
York now. In front, Ogilvy. They score! They score! Notre Dame to the Frozen Four!
The Colts of Indianapolis win Super Bowl 41.
The Fighting Irish are national champions in 2001. Notre Dame! Notre Dame! Notre Dame is the national champion.
Is that the play that will seal the playoff bid for Fighting Irish?
Here are your hosts, Darren Pritchett and Sean Stiers.
Sean in our studios. I'm Darren with the Irish hockey team, still at the team hotel. We're going to be leaving in about 45 minutes or so for 3M Arena, where the Irish will take on Minnesota in college hockey action. 9 o'clock face-off on our sister station, Z94.3 FM. It's going to be a caffeine night if I'm going to be calling a hockey game at 11:30. Although, what am I saying? I called a game at 1 a.m. a few years ago. That
good point.
Marathon game, so I'm getting soft in my old age. All right, so I'm going to go Tom Noy on you for a second and just throw the script away.
Okay.
First off this, according to Ian Rappaport, who covers the NFL for the NFL Network, he's kind of the Adam Schefter from ESPN of the NFL Network, he just tweeted out, the Bears have decided to release kicker Cody Parkey at the start of the league year, sources say. A fresh start is welcome by both parties, and the Pro Bowler will likely find work quickly. He's still due $3.5 million guaranteed on his 2019 contract. We don't have to tell Bears fans he was Mr. Post Hitter last year as he just found a way to hit every post possible, including in the postseason against Philadelphia, where he hit the post and the crossbar on one kick, which is actually pretty hard to do. So Parkey will be moving along, and the Bears will go a different direction. That just seems to make a whole lot of sense. He would have had no chance in Chicago.
Yeah,
in 2019.
After the way things ended, and then he compounded it by going on the Today Show and doing his sympathy tour, and Matt Nagy didn't really take very well to that whole thing. He didn't like it. He called it a me thing rather than a we thing. Didn't like it at all. I think it's good. Cut ties, move on, and you don't have to deal with that, because the first miss that he has, especially if it's in a clutch situation, it's just going to get, it would have gotten really loud after that.
According to people that cover the 49ers, San Francisco is going to hold on to Robbie Gould, so it looks like no chance of a reunion if the Bears were even interested in Robbie Gould. I think that's more sentimental from Bears fans, and who can blame them? Robbie was so consistent for Chicago back in the day. The next thing I want to say is, happy Miracle on Ice 39 years ago today.
Pass, shoot, score.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable. 39 years. Gosh, I really feel old today. That
no
is
kidding.
Stunning.
No kidding.
And I'm going to ask you this, since you are a very, very smart individual when it comes to the
You're
history.
Buttering me up now.
Now, don't laugh, because it takes away from all the great things I was going to say.
Okay.
People
all
think
right.
I'm joking. No, I'm being serious. I mean, you called Notre Dame women's basketball games for many years, including when they won the first national championship. So I respect your opinion as much as anybody else in our community. So I'm going to ask you two different questions, and the answers obviously can be different. Now, first, I put this out on my Twitter account right before the show, and my Twitter account is at 961SportsBeat. If you could build a women's college basketball team, all the players, Sean, are in their prime, which of these three players would you choose first? Okay?
Okay.
So they're all in their prime right now. Would you pick Skylar Diggins, Arike Ogunbowale, or Ruth Riley? Now, you covered Ruth, and you've watched Skylar and Arike.
Right.
So, Ruth helped you get a ring. So, I don't want you to be biased, but that's part of the conversation, obviously.
That's
but
a valid point, though.
But seriously, is it an obvious choice for you?
That is, I mean, it's tough. To me, it would come down, and this is no slight to Arike, but there are three really different players. Yes. You've obviously got a post player in Ruth. The game has moved a little bit away from traditional post, but, I mean, part of that is because I think it's, especially on the women's side, it's harder and harder to find it. I mean, if you have that size, you can't teach size. So that's what Ruth has going for. For Skylar, she was kind of a combination, I think, of Arike and Nielle Ivey, a scorer and also ran the show and does the whole thing. And Arike is just a pure scorer. I mean, she's dished a little bit more over these last couple of years, but didn't give up the ball a whole lot her first couple of years. And I don't mean that in a negative way. I mean, she was just pure scoring. You know, that's what she was. To me, when you think about it, I go back to Ruth because of this. Again, you cannot teach size. And when Ruth left Notre Dame, third all-time in scoring at Notre Dame, and when you think about it, what she helped create for the other players on the perimeter, Nielle Ivey and Alicia Ratai, two of the other, who they were both in the top 10 in scoring as well when they graduated at Notre Dame. And then Ruth played with another player, Sheila McMillan, who graduated a couple years before her, who was also in the top 10 at the time that she graduated. So you can argue that Ruth, while she helped set those other players up because she was double-teamed so much, because she had those other scorers, she probably would have been the all-time leading scorer if it was just feed it to Ruth and go to Ruth all the time because of that size. Whereas these other two, again, not taking anything away from them, because Skylar and Arike are both great players, but they haven't had those same kind of scoring threats around him to take away potential scoring opportunities. So because of the size and how she helped the function of the whole offense, I would go Ruth Riley.
I would take Diggins over Ogunbowale. That was a pretty easy choice, just because Skylar was a much more complete player. Remember, she was a point guard a lot of times, and she's distributing the ball, so how many more points could she have scored in her career? I mean, assists and steals, she's way ahead. Ruth and Skylar, that's a tough one. I lean toward Ruth, but it wasn't by much, to say the least. Again, it's hard to find that 6'5 post player to do the things that Ruth did, but Skylar was a complete player defensively. I mean, had almost 500 steals. So she was a player that you could count on to do a lot of different things to help your basketball team.
Who won the Final Four matchup with Notre Dame and Baylor? It was Baylor. And it was because they had, and her name is escaping me right now. I can't think of her name. I can see her. But
the big girl.
Yeah, exactly. Again, you can't teach size. And she was a big reason why.
And here is the results of the vote so far. Riley, 39%. Diggins, 33%. Agumbawale, 28%. So I just asked you, if you're starting a team, which of the three would you pick? And you went with Riley. So here is the second question. I had Eric rank the best five players of the Muffin McGraw era. Oof. Now, is your answer the same?
No, I would probably actually put Skylar at the top. And maybe that sounds like a contradiction, but
absolutely not. It's different questions.
Yeah, exactly. When you're talking about the best overall player, I would put Skylar up at the top. Man, then you're talking about a lot of good players after that. But yeah, I would put Skylar Diggins at the top.
Okay, I know Eric's list. He had Jewel Lloyd 5. He had Agumbawale 4. Beth Cunningham Morgan 3. And then had Riley and Diggins at the top. So it was an interesting list, to say the least. Would you put Agumbawale ahead of Cunningham Morgan? That's really the only debate, I think, from Eric's list.
Yeah, and see, she's one that was right before my era, essentially. So I did not get to see her play as much. So I didn't get to see that game. So that would be tough. I mean, obviously, I know that she's right up there at the top as well, you know. So, I mean, she was a really good player. But it's tougher for me to evaluate because I just never got to see as much of her.
I built you up. You got to answer the question.
I know. I know. It's tough.
All right. Well, that wasn't on the list of topics, but I wanted to throw it out there because of your experience being around this Irish women's basketball program. It's a fun debate. We can't argue who hit the most incredible shot in Final Four history for the Irish women's basketball team, and that would be Agumbawale. She'd be 1-2 with the shot she hit last year. Ruth, of course, hit the free throws that put the Irish on top of Purdue with just seconds left. All right, Notre Dame and Virginia Tech men's basketball action tomorrow, 4 o'clock on WSBT Radio. The Irish coming off a disappointing loss at home to Wake Forest. So give me your expectation level tomorrow.
Well, I honestly don't know what to expect, Darren, because, I mean, if we go back to Tuesday, I expected to see something much different than what we saw when they lost to Wake Forest. I thought we would see an offensive explosion against the worst scoring defense in the ACC, but instead of seeing a team, Wake was giving up 75.5 points a game, so instead of seeing the Irish score at least mid-70s, if not above, they only scored 14 points more against Wake than they did in their loss to Virginia against the best defensive team in the ACC. So I'm not exactly sure what we're going to see tomorrow, to be quite honest. How about you?
Well, Virginia Tech beat the Irish the first time around in Blacksburg. That was back on January 1st. Tech right now, a little inconsistent. They've been without their point guard, Justin Robinson. He's had a toe injury. The offense has not been the same. So Alexander Walker, 6'5 guard, has been a part of the point answer. He's a 16-point-per-game guy, hitting 39% of his threes. Last couple of games, though, he's been off the mark. Understandable against Virginia, not understandable against Pittsburgh. 20 total points in those two games, 6 for 21 from the field, 1 of 8 from 3. And then also, you've got Kerry Blackshear, 6'10 big guy. Here's my big worry. 14.6 rebounds per game, but look what he's done the last four games. 85 total points. He is 30 for 41 from the field. He's actually 6 of 10 from 3, and in those four games, he has grabbed 33 rebounds. We saw the Irish struggle with the young Wake Forest big guys. Well, Blackshear is an imposing force inside, can also take the shot from the outside. How do the Irish defend him? I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. You hope you get something from Juwan Durham tomorrow. We'll see if he gets a few more minutes in this game. The Irish are at home, so you always have hope, but this year's just been a little different. It's just been a very, very unpredictable season, highlighted by the inability to play well down the stretch against an equally young Wake Forest team on Tuesday.
Yeah, and I mean, when you look at that first meeting, Notre Dame out-rebounded Virginia Tech 33-25, but they still lost by the 15 points, and why that stat is deceptive, though, it's like, okay, well, you out-rebounded them. Well, Virginia Tech shot 60% from the field, yeah, including 71% in the second half. So, you know, it's like figuring that, and again, based on what's going on right now, how you figure out what that, how that's going to translate tomorrow. Because T.J. Gibbs actually had what was at the time one of his better games of the season. He tied for what was then his season-high 19 points, hit 5 3-pointers. And again, they still lost by 15. But kind of as you pointed out, with Robinson hurt, it seems like if there's a time for Notre Dame to have a chance to get to Virginia Tech, this is probably it, because they've lost three of their last five, and the two wins are against Pittsburgh and Georgia Tech. And neither one of them was a convincing win. They were both really close wins, and even the losses were close as well for the most part, but they were losses, a loss to Clemson thrown in there. Yeah. So it's, you know, again, this would seem like the time, but Tuesday would have seemed like the time for Notre Dame to get an ACC victory as well.
We were surprised Tuesday. Maybe we'll be surprised in a good way.
Who knows?
Tomorrow.
Who knows?
4 o'clock tip from Purcell Pavilion. Pregame with Jack Nolan at 3:40 here on WSBT Radio. It is 21 minutes after the top of the hour. Sportsbeat continues next on WSBT. 25 minutes after the top of the hour, Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat presented by Budweiser. Sean Stiers from our studios. I'm Darren Pritchett with the Irish hockey team in Minnesota. The Irish and the Golden Gophers will meet tonight at 3 a.m. Arena, 9 o'clock Eastern Time. Face off on our sister station, Z94.3 FM. What's on the line for Notre Dame? First off, they need help for their NCAA tournament resume on the outside looking in for the tournament as of right now, with 2 weekends left in the regular season, then the Big Ten tournament. More short-term, the Irish right now in third place in the Big Ten, 2 points behind second place Minnesota. This is it for Minnesota in conference play. The Irish have 2 games in hand on the Gophers, so when Minnesota completes the series against Notre Dame, their Big Ten season is complete. So if the Irish can split, for example, they would go into next weekend 2 points behind Minnesota. You win one game, you jump them. The Irish will be home to take on Penn State. So that's a little idea what's at stake for the Irish this weekend. Notre Dame was swept by Minnesota at home earlier this year, including a very disappointing 2-1 loss, a game in which a bad change late in the third with under 20 seconds left led to a breakaway and a goal with seconds left by Minnesota. Here's Irish head coach Jeff Jackson on tonight's opponent, the Minnesota Gophers.
This is Fighting Irish Hockey on Z94.3.
Whoa. That's the wrong soundbite there. I don't think that's Coach Jackson. That kind of sounded like a voice that sounded very, very familiar.
It did
that's
sound
for
familiar.
Sure.
The cut that I, it says Jackson on Minnesota, so
okay.
I am not
sure. You want to move along to the next one? You want to try one more time?
Let's see what we've got here, Darren.
Okay.
Okay, how about switching lines? You want to go to that one?
Let's talk about that because last weekend on Friday, the Irish lines did not play very well. Coach Jackson was disappointed in a couple of guys, so he broke up one line and basically created 3 new ones. Because of that, He's going to keep the Dylan Malmquist, Michael O'Leary, Michael Graham line together. That has been by far the best line for Notre Dame the last month. But then on Saturday, he switched everything else up, trying to find a spark and maybe get the attention of a couple of guys. One guy went from the first line to the fourth line. So that's a little idea of how, I think, frustrated the coaches were. So here's Coach Jackson on switching lines before the game on Saturday.
You know, so I broke all three of them up and put them on different lines. And it's been really hard because, you know, when we made that move from moving Malmquist to left wing, it really created a void at center for us. But with the success of that line with Michael O'Leary and Michael Graham, it's really hard to break that back up. You know, they've given us a lot of offense over the last month, mostly on the power play, but they've given us good offense with that group. And it's, you know, and I've talked to Dylan about it too. He doesn't, you know, he prefers to play center, but right now with that line, the way they're playing, because they're all instinctive players, he'd rather stay there. So it has created a void for us there, you know, and, you know, is it like a potential first, second line center? And, you know, we tried Jack there. He's been, you know, playing injured, and it's been hard for him to make that transition. You know, I tried Pavanka with, you know, I thought he did a nice job with, you know, with Cal Burke. But, you know, we're going to need to have fairly balanced lines against Minnesota, so you'll see different lines again on Friday.
Well, like I said at the start of the year, would they have enough depth in their scoring? And it's been very inconsistent so far this year. They played well on Saturday and got a little more balanced scoring, but will it happen tonight against Minnesota? That's a huge question. And I talked about the line that's been really good lately: Dylan Malmquist, Michael O'Leary, and Michael Graham. O'Leary was a bottom six forward, not really producing much offense, but he has been a big reason why this Malmquist-O'Leary-Graham line has caught fire. He is the center, and he has picked up a lot of assists over the last month. And here's Coach Jackson on the evolution of his starting center, Michael O'Leary.
You know, Michael had a tough first half. You know, I think his expectations were too high, and then his confidence dropped off. We were hoping that he'd take a step this year, and it didn't happen until after Christmas. I thought he started playing much better. Even though he was still the third line center, he was playing much better. He had some great moments in the first half, you know, against UNO. There was another game, I believe, against Michigan State that he had a really good game. I mean, he's played with Michael Graham pretty much for the most of the season. But the thing is that moving Malmquist there after the injuries all of a sudden really showed that he's got more than just, you know, his defensive game. You know, we've always known he's got pretty good instincts. He's got a big body. You know, one of his weaknesses is not being strong over the puck all the time for a big guy. But he's gotten better at it. And, you know, with his, you know, playmaking ability and having two more guys similar to him playing on his line has created a little bit of a chemistry set with those three guys.
Coach Jackson on his top line, led by center Mike O'Leary. All right, Irish hockey coming up tonight against Minnesota. Pre-game right around 8:45, opening face-off 9 o'clock on our sister station, Z94.3 FM. I'm going to pack up my equipment, and I'll be on the phone with Sean in just a second as I head toward the bus, but we'll have rapid fire coming up next on WSBT.
Budweiser's weekday sports beat continues along with Darren Pritchett, who is braving the cold, even colder than here in Minnesota. I'm Sean Stiers, and I forgot, Darren, that we have our new rapid fire thing. So here we go.
Rapid fire starts now on Budweiser's weekday sports beat on 96.1 WSBT. Here is Sean Stiers and Darren Pritchett.
All right, Darren, I'm going to start you off with an audio rapid fire. Are you ready for this?
I am.
Okay, here we go.
Shooting, and there's a throwaway.
Oh,
Morris into the crowd, spilled the beer. And will they cross the line? They do. Morris is dripping with beer. Paxton, Stiers, some Schlitz maybe, who knows? He's just soaked in beer in the pour, and it's in the guy's hair. It's in the guy's hair. Your Bledsoe with a three. No. Beer is every place. Some of Milwaukee's, the Miller High Life spilled on the floor.
So that is, you know who that is, I assume, correct?
Kevin Harlan.
One Mr. Kevin Harlan from the Milwaukee Bucks game last night. So just your take on his fabulous take on the spilled beer on the court there where the Bucks were playing.
Well, first off, the beer brand he mentioned should have been spilled because that's awful. So that's the first thing. Second, no, he's the best. Remember the guy that ran on the field in Monday Night Football?
Yep, a couple of years ago.
It was 2 years ago, and he did the whole bit of what was happening, and he's just the best. I've never heard a TV guy jump on the radio and be as good as he is. Normally, TV guys stink when they go to radio.
Yep,
and he is the one guy that is absolutely exceptional. He gets it. You have to be descriptive, and nobody is better than him.
Goes back and forth and very smooth, and we're lucky to have him doing Monday Night Football here on WSBT every year, and of course the Super Bowl as well.
And how about Mike Tirico calling NHL games? I mean, he makes me feel inadequate. I mean, he just jumps onto a hockey game and makes it just seem so simple. I mean, come on, Mike. Can you just stink at one thing?
No kidding.
So just we feel good about ourselves in the hockey world?
Just like when Al Michaels jumped into the hockey booth for those 1980 Olympic games.
Isn't that something?
No kidding. All right, fill in the blank on this one. Notre Dame freshman linebacker Jack Kaiser is going to miss spring football practice. Of course, he's an early enrollee, but he found out that he's going to have, or that he had shoulder surgery, and that is blank.
Well, obviously a concern, but in terms of impact in 2019, maybe he was going to play a little special teams. But I don't know if it's really something that rocks the radar at this particular time. You want him to get healthy. I'm glad it's getting taken care of. But in terms of on the field in 19, not sure if there would have been an immediate impact.
Yeah, that's the thing. It likely wouldn't have been a big impact, or at least we don't think anyway. It stinks because he enrolls early to get here and practice and start school. Now he's obviously started school still, but he's not going to be able to practice. But the upside, I guess, is they found this out early, so they get it done early, which gets his healing process started sooner. And as you said, the likelihood how much he was going to contribute right away probably wasn't really high, so he gets the shoulder fixed. There's a good chance he'll be recovered enough to practice in the fall, so he'd still be able to do that. He gets a head start on his classes still, and by this time next year, maybe he's out there in the spring competing for a starting job. Who knows? Or at least some kind of position anyway. So at least they got it found early, and he can get this whole healing process started. Okay, what do you think of this quote from Cubs owner Tom Ricketts on why the Cubs did not spend more on free agents this offseason? So here's the quote. "I think one of the biggest mistakes the previous ownership made is they considered every year a discrete event, as if, okay, what do we have to do this year to sell our season tickets? What do we have to do to sell the suites? What do we have to do to get our sponsors back?" He went on to say, "You have to think of it in terms of where you're going to be 2, 3, 4, 5 years down the line," end quote. So what do you think of that?
That's a really bizarre quote. I have not seen or heard that, so I'm trying to digest it on the fly here.
I want to say saw it in The Athletic.
Well, you have an amazing foundation of a team that won the World Series in 2016. The window's going to be open for sure for this group, probably for at least 3 more years, maybe longer depending on who they choose to extend. I mean, they're going to have to pay some big contracts coming up in the next couple of years. So I don't get not trying to improve the team any way possible during this stretch. Now, if you're the Cubs, 5 years ago, we're having a different conversation. That was a rebuilding phase, but now I don't get that particular thing.
Well, I agree with the window, but I guess the biggest issue they have right now is the fact that they have $52.5 million this year alone going to Jason Hayward, Yu Darvish, and Tyler Chatwood. So that's a fourth of their luxury tax limit, you know, so they have to decide, are you going to go that far over that? Because a total of around $150 million after they devoted that to sign Darvish and Chatwood last year. So I'm not sure it makes sense for them to go out and throw more good money after bad, because, I mean, when you've got Chris Bryant, who was injured most of last year, had the worst year of his career so far, if he bounces back and is anywhere near the form that he had over his first 3 years, then that's almost like you've added a guy anyway, because they basically didn't have that guy last year. And I mean, they obviously still, you know, they're married to Yu Darvish for quite a while, so they've got to have him bounce back. They've got to have him someplace close to what he was. So that's two guys right there who could be big impacts if they just come back to some kind of form.
And Sean, I got to take off.
Okay, sounds good. Well, all right. Have a good one tonight, and we will talk to you next week. All right, so Darren Pritchett heading out to do some Notre Dame hockey, and he's got that coming up with a late puck drop at 9 o'clock over on Z94.3 FM. So we've got that. So I had another Cubs question, and we'll get to that on Monday's Rapid Fire when Darren is back in town. And, of course, don't forget, coming up next week, we are out at the 4A Penn Sectional, all five games from the Penn Sectional next week beginning Tuesday. All right, here on 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader. The first game is Mishawaka against Adams, and then the game after that is the one everyone's talking about, Penn against Riley. And then the winners of those two games move on to the semifinals on Friday with Clay and LaPorte getting the first round byes, and the championship game is next Saturday. So all five of those games from the Penn 4A sectional here, 96.1 WSBT. We'll take a timeout. We'll come back and talk a little bit more basketball on Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat, 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader. Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat continues on 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader. Sean Steyers in with you. Darren Pritchett heading to the hockey bus to head to the arena in Minneapolis for some Notre Dame hockey tonight. You'll hear that game over on Z94.3 FM. They'll be playing tomorrow as well, as Darren, of course, as always, will have the call from both games. Earlier today, Sean and Sharpley and the Leprechaun Lunch was out at Four Winds Casino South Bend. Had a good time out there, as we always did, always do. Some tasty lunch, gave away some hats, gave away a portable radio as well. And also, while we were out there, Tom Noy from the South Bend Tribune filling in today. And we spent some time with some Notre Dame basketball conversation. And we started with DJ Harvey. He's been back this year. How would you assess what we've seen from him this year? How close to 100% do you think he is after the microfracture knee surgery?
Maybe a C+. Maybe he's 80%. Just in the last couple of games, really the Georgia Tech game, I want to say, at home, he looked like he was the DJ Harvey that people had come to expect. 18.7 rebounds. It was something where we talk a lot about the rock bottoms of this team. I think he hit rock bottom when Notre Dame won at Boston College on February 2nd. And he didn't play much. I think he only played 21 minutes. He was 1-7 from the field, was down. Notre Dame made its run in the second half with DJ Harvey on the bench. And he was a guy that I think the coaching staff needed to get with. Specifically, Ryan Humphrey got with DJ Harvey and said, look, don't hang everything you do on your shot. If you're not scoring, if you're not getting looks, get on the backboard. Be active. You know, do some other things other than just try to score. And I think the light bulb finally came on for DJ Harvey in talking with Ryan Humphrey. He's been better on the backboard. He's been more comfortable or consistent or just calm in saying, I'm going to get my time and not, or I'm going to get my shots. I'm going to get my minutes. So it's just something where, again, though, with this team, whether it's DJ Harvey or one of the freshmen or whoever, it's just like so many small steps that they're taking. I think the big leaps with all these guys will have to come springtime, summer, early fall, to where we see them next year and say, wow, they're different. They're better.
So that's what I want to do now. I want to go through this when you talk about spring, summer, fall, because all these guys are going to be back. You'll add Rex Pfluger, who's obviously been out this year. So when you look at DJ, what does he need to do? What does he need to be next year?
Maybe just become, and a lot of the, there'll be a lot of common themes through the roster because there's a lot of similar problems. But I think with DJ Harvey, it's just become more mature as a basketball player. Like he's had his ups and downs this year, but that's to be expected because we mentioned he missed 17 games last season. So he's really a redshirt freshman.
Yeah,
this is really the first time that he's going through. Okay, how do I get my shots? Am I going to get my minutes? What's my role? Where do I fit? So I think just from an overall maturity standpoint, just growing up a little bit more in the offseason, saying, all right, I can relax. I've been there. I've been a main guy. Now let me take my game to the next level.
Who on this team, we've got all these different freshmen, and rather than going guy by guy with all of them, this team obviously lacks that Vestoria VJ, that spot-up guy who's just going to be out there and get that shot for you. Who of this crew could be that guy next year?
Nate Leshefsky.
And I think that's kind of what you're expecting more of this year, right?
Yeah, but you just look at it, and it's almost like every time he gets a ball, he treats it like it's going to blow up in his hands. He does. Like he's got to get rid of it quick. His feet don't get set. He's not shooting with his shoulders square.
Just a little too antsy. Just,
yeah, like I gotta hurry up again. When you're in this, everybody says, well, you know, he did this in high school and he did that in high school. Look, you're playing in the best league in the country. You're playing Carolina and Duke and Virginia and NC State. You got dudes left and right coming at you where everybody can play. And I think it's hard for kids who have it easy or relatively easy in high school once they step into the ACC and they're like, there are no weak links, and that's really something that's kind of knocked Nate Leshefsky back to where just get in the gym. I think the training staff believes they can get him up to like 230, 235 next year. He should be one of the best shooters in the ACC when everything's said and done with him in the next 3 years.
Well, and I mean, we've overdone the young thing to death, and I mean, we know they are, but it's just like when you look at last year's team and most Mike Bray teams, the freshmen, there might be one or two guys who are typically part of the rotation. DJ Harvey was the only guy last year. He was there sometimes. There were times he wasn't. Then obviously he got injured. But when you've got four of these guys at the same time, now three, but when you've got all that out there together, it's just a cum effect, and I think we kind of take that for granted.
You had five freshmen in the class. Now, a couple of them, obviously, Robbie Carmody's out with the injury.
Right.
Chris Doherty really hasn't played.
That's what I'm saying. Now it's three.
But you had five freshmen that never played ACC basketball. You had Juwan Durham, who was a transfer, who really never played college basketball. So there's six new guys. You had DJ Harvey that we mentioned, missed 17 games last year. Those are seven guys that, okay, forget young as we know it as in age. Okay, these guys aren't young anymore technically because they played 26 games. But from a maturity standpoint, they're young. Like they're still kind of immature to where, and Mike Bray mentioned it the other night, like Nate Leshefsky and Dane Goodwin have been given every opportunity to succeed. They haven't been able to take advantage of it. And I think the other night, Mike Bray saw it really for the first time in both of them. They kind of hung their heads because their game, they just can't get their games in gear. And that's what young guys do. Not necessarily young in age, but young in maturity in college basketball to say, look, I've just got to fight my way through this. I know I'm a good basketball player, and I just got to keep doing what I'm doing because eventually it's going to swing back my way, and I'm going to be a good player on this team.
Well, that's why Mike Bray's program, the way he runs it, staying old, his catchphrase, I mean, it's the exception to college basketball, but that's how he's been able to do it. And typically, again, because there's only one or two freshmen on any given year where they're essentially able to be an understudy, and they're able to they've got the long haul to figure out their role, to figure out what they're supposed to do and all these different things. But when you've got three of them out there at the same time and four previously before the Carmody injury, it's just a lot different situation when you're flung into that as opposed to being able to ease into it and find it as you go.
And who's at the top? Like, we're talking a lot about the freshmen, but who's at the top end of the classes to where, look, last year, Bonzi Colson, Matt Farrell, Martin Gebbin, who did not get nearly enough credit to what he did on and off the floor last year for this basketball team. You had those three guys. You had Austin Torres. You had Matt Gregory, who was a walk-on and got a scholarship last year. Didn't play much, but was a locker room guy. Matt Gregory and Austin Torres, when Farrell and Colson were kind of in their own worlds going through their injuries, they were there to hold the locker room together and say, all right, guys, this is they're pulling the young guys along. And that's how they were able to get to 8-10. You look at it this year, who's pulling the young guys? Like, who's helping Nate Lisiewski, Dane Goodwin, Prentice Hubb to an extent? There's not a lot of options.
Right.
Like, there, you don't have any senior. You don't have any active senior. Okay, the entire senior class is wiped out. Two of them transferred, Matt Ryan and Elijah Burns, and Rex Fluger is down with an injury. So where is the senior? Where's the old guy when things get tight to say, look, I got you guys? T.J. Gibbs, first year as a captain, really not cut out for that role right now. John Mooney thrown in the captain's role in December after Elijah Burns left. He wasn't ready to be a captain. Like, he started off strong in December and January, but then now he's to the point where maybe he's getting worn down, kind of thinking about his game. Who's going to help pull him along? So it's like everybody wants to say this is the reason or that's the reason that they're 13-13 and they're 3-10 and the pieces don't fit. But everything that Mike Bray has been about in his 19 years at Notre Dame has been totally wiped off the board as far as, like you said, staying old. You don't have old guys. And if you don't have old guys in this league, you're going to be 3-10.
And again, when you look at the fact that you've got two guys who should be seniors on this team in Ryan and Burns, yep. I mean, that makes a big difference as well. I mean, Matt Ryan last year would have seen so much time had he not decided to leave.
And that's an epidemic from college basketball to where guys want everything right now. Had Matt Ryan left for one reason only. He saw DJ Harvey coming in and said, he's going to take my spot. I'm not going to come off the bench.
Rather than staying and competing.
Yeah, stay and compete. And even if he didn't start, Harvey goes down, Farrell goes down, Colson goes down. Matt Farrell would have averaged 18 points a game last year. He might have averaged 20 this year. Instead, he goes to Vanderbilt. Vanderbilt, the wheels have come off there. They're winless in the SEC. He may be getting a lot of shots, but he's not doing much else. But it's just something where if Matt Ryan would have stayed, and look, there was no way Matt Ryan could have stayed because he had one foot out the door in Buffalo at the end of that season when they went to the NCAA tournament. But it's something where when those guys leave, like Mike Bray builds his program on guys staying. He expects guys to stay. He makes Elijah Burns a captain because he thinks he's going to be there. Like, look, Elijah Burns is not going to be a double-double machine. But just having a senior and having a guy that's been there, that really means something in this program.
You talk to these guys quite a bit, obviously, and obviously you talk to Mike Bray quite a bit as well. Is that an upfront conversation he has with most of these guys when they're out there recruiting them about the, you know, playing time?
Oh,
be
yeah.
patient. I mean, I think it is.
Yeah,
but.
And they know. And see, now they know that if you go to Notre Dame, you may not play the first couple of years. You may reg. Some guys may go on the 5-year plan, but on the back end, they know that they're never going to leave the floor as juniors and seniors. And you work your career like you work your college career up to where when you're a junior and senior, man, I'm going to be a main guy. I'm going to get my shots. I'm going to get my minutes. Everything's going to fall into place. Like, Mike Bray's taking a beating right now in the fact that they don't have anybody coming in next year as a freshman. How in the world can this team go to the Elite Eight 2 years in a row and not have any recruits coming in for next year? Well, the fans that are upset about Mike Bray's recruiting must have missed the press conference back in November where he said every single prospect's home that he went into, other than the top 10 guys that they were, or the 5-star guys that they were involved in, every single prospect looks at him and says, Coach, I want to play as a freshman. Can you guarantee that I'm going to play as a freshman?
Right.
And he looks at that class and he says, I'll tell you what, I signed five guys last year that will be sophomores when you arrived, and I've got a 6th guy that came in as a transfer that has 2 years of eligibility left. Honestly, I can't show you the playing time that you want if you want to come to our program.
Sean and Sharpley and the Leprechaun Lunch comes your way every Friday from noon until 1. We were at Four Winds Casino today. That's Tom Noy filling in for Mr. Evan Sharpley today. Budweiser's weekday sports beat is brought to you by Budweiser. Great times are waiting. Grab some buds. Also by Lechleitner Door. Lechleitner Door. delivers. Darren Pritchett calling some Notre Dame hockey over on Z94.3. The puck drops at 9 o'clock tonight in Minnesota. So we've got that coming up over there. Have a great weekend. Notre Dame basketball tomorrow at 4 o'clock. Notre Dame Virginia Tech host the Hokies here on 96.1 WSBT South Bend, the sports leader.